This is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Artificial intelligence, cloud computing, the CRISPR of the DNA search, all of those wonderful tools that are now featured in Science magazine, Nature magazine, and in headlines around the world. What does that tell us about the competition in the world by researchers and modelers and developers and scholars? I welcome Arjun Ramani, who is global business for The Economist magazine, specializing in technology. And he's going to now take me to what appears to be a contest between the People's Republic of China and all the rest, described as the West, led by the U.S., but there are elements around the world, from Taiwan to U.K. to India. So I welcome Arjun to comment on what was then 2008 and what is now 2022. Arjun, congratulations on this revelation, the two systems next to each other with some profound differences. First, where we started. I learned from you that in 2008, the PRC was putting in only a third as much of the West in R&D. By 2020, that had come up to 85%, and it continues to climb. Is R&D or development or high-end investigation, is that now a priority in the People's Republic of China? Good evening to you.
Well, thank you for having me, John. And it is. It's a key priority for China. And you can actually see that in the Party Congress report that just came out in the last few days. And you can, if you just look in the report on it, it mentions science and technology as a national security priority. And it's actually overtaken, a lot of other prior considerations like economic reform as a priority for the Chinese Communist Party. And you can see that if you read the report, the number of mentions of science and technology has actually overtaken these other fields.
Funding is everything when it comes to science. You know this because there's so much time is spent on making applications for funding for your lab or your researchers, your better idea. So first we'll go to the PRC's model of funding. Yes, of course, it's government funds, but how so? How do they experiment? What is new for them, Arjun?
That's a great question. And the way China funds R&D and science is actually quite interesting, because if you look at the data, which I spent quite a while doing for my big piece, the share of overall investment in innovation in China that is done by the federal government is only about 15 to 20% on first glance when you look at the raw numbers. But it turns out, because China's the arm of the state extends so far into society, that when you look at both state-owned enterprises, industrial policy towards technology, and finally its new government guidance funds, where the party acts as an investor in venture capital and private equity, the state's influence over innovation becomes closer to 70%. So basically, the government in China has all these ways of directing money to its favored sectors, like semiconductors, like AI, like batteries, through all these unique ways by not just investing directly, but also indirectly influencing the private sector.
Guidance fund, that's the tell here. They guide the direction of the researchers. Now we come over to the West's way of doing business. As I understand, we spend a great deal of money on video games. What does that tell us about how the West funds basic research?
That's a great question. And priority setting in the West is much more decentralized, and it's much more of a scattershot, right? It follows market priorities. It follows what researchers think, should be best in a lot more cases. Though it's worth noting that the government does set priorities in some cases. And video games is a great example, because if you look at GPUs, which are one of the main components of these advanced semiconductor chips, there's this new type of semiconductor chip that's used for artificial intelligence. And these GPUs were initially created for video gaming, so we could get even better graphics for video gaming. But they now have become a central component in the semiconductor chip race between the West and China, because AI and the chips that the AI models run on are so important for autonomous weapons and other advanced weapon systems in the future of economic growth. So it's kind of strange that a lot of these things that you might not expect to matter a lot for national security in a roundabout way actually really do matter.
Yes, here now we have a way to compare and contrast here. The West still puts an enormous amount of money into R&D, to research, 3.8% of the GDP. I'm following Arjun's reporting, whereas the PRC is only putting in 2.7%. But it's important what that money goes towards. Certainly from the outside, it appears Guidance Fund is informed and wise, you know, all high. They make a decision, you're going to spend your time doing this because it's going to benefit all of us, all of society, and not just 12-year-olds entertaining themselves when they should be doing homework, which is a video game. But then we come to the question of what can go right and what can go wrong in the Western style of private enterprise. One of your correspondents says, we spend too much time on bits and not enough on atoms. Another observation is that the free market thinking of Milton Friedman does not work here. Please explain that criticism, because what is life without a video game? Why is that not well spent R&D, Arjun?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's a balancing act. I think those two examples of quotes you mentioned, one from Peter Thiel and the other from who is an American investor, and the other from Todd Young, an American senator, are pointing to the fact that a lot of the tech innovation that's happened over the last several decades has been in the world of software. It's been in the world of consumer internet companies like, you know, social networking and ride apps and so on and so forth. And I think they're critiquing the idea that this is not the type of hard power innovation that we, you know, you might want in a conflict with another global superpower, where you want things like, you know, future energy systems. You want things like, you know, advanced chips that can be used in autonomous weapon systems and so on and so forth. And those types of, you know, innovations require more R&D. They're more risky, and they require the state to shoulder some of the risk of the investment. And so what they're basically saying is the government needs to come in and, you know, provide some of this risk capital, shoulder some of the risk, and do a little bit more priority setting to make sure that the private sector is working on things that are directed towards the national interest. But I think there's a risk to that, as you point out, which is a lot of the times what the private sector does can, in roundabout ways, massively benefit the national interest. So video games with GPUs is a good example. Another example is the fact that, you know, a lot of these big technology companies that initially were servicing consumers like Google and Facebook, they also now are the biggest cloud service providers, cloud computing providers in the world, which is, you know, a core input into these future cutting edge deep technologies. So it's very, very difficult to plan innovation. But I think the general sentiment in the West is there's more the government can do to ensure that innovation is happening in these core sectors.
Strategic industries. Let's identify the big heavy lift stuff. Strategic industries include AI, artificial intelligence, biotech, and quantum computing. Those three. We can also talk about medical research as well. And all those are areas where the U.S. is participating with great deal of sophistication. Has China identified those particular areas as where to compete head to head with the West?
Yeah, I would say that. And I would add semiconductors and future energy systems to the list. I think you can think about strategic industries as, you know, these cutting edge industries that matter a lot to a nation's economic power. And crucially, you know, you can get a lot of leverage over other countries with them. And what I mean by leverage is if you're at the cutting edge and you're the only country that can, for example, produce an advanced semiconductor chips, other countries might become dependent on you, dependent on your exports in order to stay at the cutting edge. And you can leverage that in economic competition. And I think a perfect example of that is the export controls that we just saw that came out of the White House in the last few weeks, where America is basically putting a chokehold on the Chinese semiconductor chip industry by banning exports of advanced chips, and also preventing other countries that rely on American software from sending over equipment and advanced chips to China. And so that's expected to massively cripple the Chinese chip industry. And the only reason we're able to do that is because America has a competitive edge in semiconductor chips at the moment. But what's important to note is there are other industries where China is at the bleeding edge. For example, 5G, telecommunications, if you look at batteries and electric vehicles, these are all areas where China is, you know, at the cutting edge, both on the production side and also on the research side. You know, their universities are in close connection with their manufacturing plants, with their corporations, and are producing, really, really high quality research here. So America shouldn't take its advantage in several sectors for granted, because, there's it's a very, very multifaceted economic competition.
All right. We're looking at right now, I'm following the reporting by Arjun, that the strategic industries, the U.S. Investment in strategic industries has grown from 10% to 20% over this last decade, whereas China has soared from 15 in 2019 to 35 in 2020. So it's going up very quickly, faster. So when we come back, what can go wrong and why with China's model, which we'll call PRC Incorporated, or the American model, which we'll call Catch as Catch Can. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.